An interesting day in Tasmania, lots of news going on and an interesting time for a chat as federal parliament rises for a couple of weeks. Wayne Swan, former treasurer and member for Lilly, has joined us in the studio and he's brought a guest with him, Ed Balls, who is 3 years the education secretary in the UK in the Labor government there, a former shadow chancellor and a man in recent times better known for some of his work to this music.
Open Gangnam Style.
It's 9:07. If you haven't seen the footage, it's hard to think of our guest as doing anything but dancing. Ed Balls, a former member of the UK government. Good to talk to you this morning. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me and for reminding me of that moment.
Indeed. How long ago was that now, the YouTube sensation that was Ed Balls on Strictly Come Dancing?
It was all of the autumn a year ago. So it started at the end of August, went through until December. And we lasted 10 weeks on the show. And that particular routine, it was a salsa to your Gangnam Style, was nominated in Britain for our national television awards, the television moment of the year. We came second, so we didn't quite win it. I think one of the, I'm not sure it was the highest or the lowest moment of my life, but on Twitter, there was a mum who had posted that she was reading my book, which was about 20 years about politics and economics, and her 9-year-old daughter pointed at the book and said, there's that really good dancer, Ed Balls. So there we are.
And so you are known. Wayne Swan, good morning to you. Of course, I can still think of one of your predecessors as treasurer dancing to the Macarena.
And not very well.
Similarly cringeworthy. It is a bit of a rite of passage.
Cringeworthy?
No. It is a different class
cringeworthy? Hang on.
Wayne Swan, were you ever shanghaied into something that at the time you must have thought?
No, I always steered clear. I mean, I had enough flak flying around when I was treasurer. I didn't need any more.
What's going on in Australian politics, Ed? You would have been here when Pauline Hanson in the Senate wore a burqa into Parliament to make a point to the criticism of many. We're frustrated by politics here. I think some of that frustration's been seen in your home country. What are you seeing in Australian parliamentary life at the moment to reflect on?
Well, we've had in Britain wages not growing for 15 years, the financial crisis, we had an expenses scandal in our Parliament, and there's a lot of public disdain for politicians, a lot of anger, and that's led to last year our decision to vote to leave the European Union, which, you know, the companies and most of the politicians and everybody in business were saying this would be a very bad idea, and lots of people voted for change because I think they were thinking that, well, if this is as good as it gets, then maybe we'll lurch to something else. Now, I think it's pretty risky myself, that kind of populism, turning in and only looking inside your country, cutting us off from the rest of the world for open trading countries like Australia or Britain. That's a pretty foolish thing. So I think one of the things that Wayne and I are talking about is what lessons do we have to learn from the global financial crisis, which can persuade working people that they can be better off, that they can share in prosperity. It's not only going to be for the richest, and to avoid some of that populism, the kind of populism which leads to people wearing burqas in Parliament.
Well, indeed, and the sort of painful life experience at the moment that people are dealing with in their cost of living, in their questions about their future in terms of housing affordability. And then we have the idiocy that we see day after day after day, Wayne Swan, in the place that you go to work and have been for a period of time.
Well, we're seeing around the world growing inequality, which is leading to growing polarisation.
But to pull you up for a moment, we're seeing growing idiocy in parliaments.
Yes.
While all of this is happening to real people in their lives.
And that makes people even more frustrated, when they see parliamentarians carrying on like that. But the thing that matters most to people is their pay packet and whether their living standards are going to increase or whether they're decreasing. And that fundamentally, more than anything else, is the cause of the polarisation that we've seen in Britain. Now, here in Australia, we've done a lot better than the UK. We came through the global financial crisis in much better shape, largely because we put in place our stimulus policies. And here in Tasmania, they had a dramatic impact, disproportionate here because of the nature of the state. But now, over the last 3 or 4 years, we're beginning to get what Ed has had in Britain for a lot longer. What we're seeing is the impact of trickle-down economics, which is essentially a program that says the solution to lifting living standards is tax cuts for the rich, deregulation for the powerful, and wage suppression. And that is causing living standards to be eroded around the world. And that, more than anything else, is fundamentally making people very unsettled. And then they see people like Pauline Hanson and many others behaving like that.
People are voting for people like Pauline Hanson because they don't believe established parties like yours have answers
to improving pay packets. Or Donald Trump. Now, the difference between, say, Australia having Pauline Hanson in the Senate and Donald Trump becoming President of the United States is that in Australia we had 30 years of real wage increases. In the United States, they had 30 years of real wage decreases.
One of the issues with Brexit that drove a lot of the Brexit vote was concerns about migration. We have major immigration annually into Australia. Is that contributing significantly to lower wages for people? And should we be talking about reducing the number of people that come to Australia?
Well, it depends whether you're talking about the main migration program, the skilled program, which I don't believe is. But I believe there's an enormous amount of workforce exploitation going on out there and abuse of 457 visas and others. First of all, there seems to be now, in parts of business, a preparedness to rip off workers and just behave illegally. We're seeing a lot more of that.
So why aren't criminal penalties available to people that rip off workers? You wouldn't have seen this, but our the people that manage 7-Eleven, which is the 24-hour convenience store chain in Australia, have been involved in a systematic and massive ripping off of workers and their wages. Why aren't we talking about these white-collar experts facing jail?
Well, these are precisely the questions that Ed and I are raising now in this project. I talked at the press club about corporate behaviour and the lack of ethics and the lack of commitment to community that we are increasingly seeing in some of our corporate behaviour. And I think there's a huge problem there. It's not just a question of what government does. Once upon a time, employers saw themselves as having a commitment to a community and being part of it. Now, the overemphasis solely on the bottom line has led to a series of behaviours which are very detrimental. And I think there's a whole series of changes we should be considering. Corporate boards are a closed shop. Basically, they're controlled by the top end of town. Most of the people on the senior boards in Australia wouldn't have met an Australian worker and probably haven't met their own workforce. So I think there's a lot of changes we've got to talk about in this area.
Ed Balls, do you think Jeremy Corbyn is the answer to your current Labor leader?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn did better our last election, but Labor still lost. And I don't think that Jeremy Corbyn currently has the right policy prescription, because on the one hand, if you just tell people, which is what the Conservatives did in Britain in the referendum campaign, that it's going fine, there's more jobs, you're better off, and people think, well, in their own lives, that isn't really true because they're struggling and the wages aren't rising and they can't afford housing. If you just tell them business as usual, then people are going to get angry. If the alternative, though, is just nation states going it alone, cutting off from the rest of the world, I don't think that works either. We've always been countries which have traded with the world, which have brought skilled people to our countries. Jeremy Corbyn is somebody who's always been quite anti-European. He's never believed in that sort of economic cooperation, and I think that's probably a mistake. So what we need is Labour politicians to say we can make the economy grow more strongly, but also, as Wayne said, we can reform the way our economies work so the benefits don't just go to a few, they go to everybody. They're more widely shared.
How do you do that specifically? How do you make sure that the minimum wage standard is higher for a start so that people have a fighting chance?
Well, you need to make sure that your minimum wage is set at the right level and is properly enforced. You need to make sure that people who are working are getting proper protections, and if they're working overtime, they're being paid for the overtime. That if they're doing an employed job, they ought to be getting health insurance and sickness benefits and those kind of things. You need to make sure that the tax system isn't unfairly rigged. And I think some of the debates you're having in Australia now about negative gearing and about trusts, the Bill Shorten speech from a couple of weeks ago, I think those are important debates, because if people look at the tax system and think, well, it's rigged unfairly to help the highest earners, and if they think, well, I work hard and play by the rules and I'm not getting better off, that's exactly the kind of circumstance in which you start to see extremism and populism start to take
root. So, Wayne Swan, you were treasurer while all of this growth in Australian property prices were growing significantly. Why didn't you tackle the issue of negative gearing and the distortion it places on the housing market?
Well, the distortions it was placing on the housing market weren't anything like they are now. I mean, what you've seen in the last 3 or 4 years is just a massive, absolutely massive move.
But it was always distorting, and that was arguably the easiest time to do something about it. Yeah, why didn't you do something about it?
But during that period, it was providing essential supply. What is actually happening now is just a massive distortion. I think there was a case then. It wasn't one of the things that I chose to do. I was a bit tied up with a few other tax reforms at that stage. But I think it is absolutely correct what Chris Bowen and Bill Shorten are doing in this area, including trust. Progressive taxation is the absolutely fundamental bedrock policy to deliver a fairer society, along with a decent and fair industrial relations system, a good minimum wage. The Australian minimum wage is one of the highest in the world. The problem is that in so many places out there, people aren't observing it. And what we've seen, particularly in recent years, which is what's happened in Britain, is we've seen this movement towards much more casualised work. Essentially, while the headline unemployment rate is relatively low, the underemployment rate is very high. So we've got a record high underemployment rate in Australia and in Tasmania. So there are lots of people out there on low wages who aren't getting enough hours to work. And when someone comes along and says, well, some of those hours get penalty rates, we're going to cut those too, that's the final straw for a lot of people who are living on modest incomes and finding it really hard to get by.
Mm. So what should we do about it?
Well, we need some fundamental changes in our industrial arrangements. We need fundamental changes in progressive taxation.
Like what? How would they affect? I mean, let's talk about the taxation issues.
Sure.
And you have
We just were. Negative gearing. Trust. We have outlined a very, very, I think, progressive set of changes already. Massive. The sort of things that I did. We tripled the tax-free threshold. That was massive, particularly for people on low incomes in Australia. So there's a whole range of changes that can come there, but I think in the industrial relations system, that is critical at the moment because wages now, the wages share of national income is at its lowest level in history in Australia.
The point is, though, you've got to decide this is the conversation you want to have. If the message from some politicians and some people in business is, we don't need to change anything, it'll all be okay, just wait, it'll be fine, I think in the end that leads to rising public discontent in this time. If people then say, though, there's just easy solutions, we can end the market economy, we can cut off from the world, we don't have to work with business, we all know that businesses are really important wealth creators. The growth in Tasmania depends upon entrepreneurs and small business people working really hard. But we've got to have a conversation about how we rewrite the rules to make things work in a more long-termist way and in a fairer way for working people. That is what Australia did 25, 30 years ago with the Accord. There are bigger challenges now, and you've got to have that debate again about what needs to be done.
So but there are bigger vested interests now, and Wayne Swan, the mining tax, had the experience of trying to take
on
those
vested
interests.
That was one of the tax issues we were having some trouble with.
Yeah, well, indeed, but it shows how hard it is to take on vested interests.
Because the third bedrock thing you have to do in the political system, apart from progressive taxation and the industrial relations system, is put in place a series of political reforms that pull back the power of big money in politics. There's no question that as the rich have got richer, plutocrats, people with lots of money, have sought to exercise excessive political power. And you know, I mean, my period in government, you could go through them, Gina Rinehart, Twiggy Forrest, the list is long, and there are more. So we've become a very rich country. But unfortunately, some of the richest people in the country seem to think politics is their plaything.
So let's be you again, but circa the mining tax debate, what would you have done differently when it came to the mining tax debate, one that you eventually walked away from?
I've written about this in my book at length, but just in short, a couple of things. I would have had it out on the table a lot longer for consultation. Secondly, there were some design problems in the design provided by the Treasury, which became evident as we went through that debate. But if it had been out there longer, then we might have got hold of those a bit earlier. That's just one thing. But let's be very clear. It wouldn't matter what the design was. You know, those big multinational companies, particularly those with the American orientations, think they can walk into a country like Australia and push people around.
Mm. Why can New Zealand do this and Australia can't?
Well, I don't think New Zealand can necessarily do this.
They've done a lot more in terms of workplace reform over the past couple of years in social reform.
If I were you, I'd be a bit careful about looking at workplace reform in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand doesn't have the sort of incomes that Australia has. There's a lot of talk about the New Zealand economy being a miracle economy. I'm not sure that's exactly correct.
But isn't the key thing, if you want to tackle multinational tax reform so that the companies that want to pay their fair share of tax can, but those companies who want to avoid paying their fair share in Australia or in Nigeria or wherever can't. It's very hard for Australia to tackle multinational tax reform. It's got to be done with Australia and New Zealand and Britain and America and France and Germany and developed countries with emerging market economies coming together and having, you know, a common plan. 10 years ago, when we had that financial crisis, Wayne, as treasurer, was part of a big global effort to coordinate. And a lot of that coordination has fallen apart in the last 4 or 5 years. And I think we need to get it back together. We need countries working together to solve some of these big problems.
Mm. You're on Mornings Around Tasmania. My guest this morning, Ed Balls, former Shadow Chancellor in the UK and former Education Secretary, and Wayne Swan, now the humble member for Lilly, but of course, former Treasurer of Australia as well, on the parliamentary break for a couple of weeks and then back into it again. It's coming up to 21 past nine. I should mention that these gentlemen are brought here by the Australia Institute and are going to be doing a series of functions over the next couple of days you might want to get along to and have a look at. A lot of people, Ed, regard established political parties, the Labor Party, the Liberal Party, as on the way out. What of the major parties? I mean, you can get this reform through in a number of different ways through the electoral system. What's the Labor Party got to do in your country and ours, in your view, to increase its appeal as the party of solutions?
I think that you have to do two different things at the same time. You have to be for change, because at the moment people want change. They think the status quo is not working. You've got to say, we can change the way our labour market works, our education system works, change the way our tax system works to make things fairer, and so that working people genuinely believe that things will work for them. But you've also got to build trust. And trust means, as politicians, you've got to keep your promises. If things don't go well, you've got to explain why. I think you have to tell people the truth when there's difficult decisions and why they're hard. If you come along and say, we can just spend loads and loads of money and the money's not there, then people think, well, actually, that's not going to work and I'll end up paying more tax. And so it's that combination of a commitment to radical change, but also being open and credible and winning trust. And politicians who say, there's nothing to be done, they're not, you know, I think that's not going to succeed in this era. But politicians who come along and say, there's a simple solution, and if we simply ban migrants or nationalise industry or ban the burqa, that somehow that's going to solve these big problems. I think electorates are quite sceptical about those things as well. So we need a grown-up conversation about what's got to be done.
What are you seeing, Wayne Swan, in terms of the people putting their hand up for pre-selection to choose this as their life, whether Labor, Liberal or Greens at the moment, given how tough the political arena is?
There's no question that politics is hollowed out by and large, and that less and less people, say, of my generation, similar to me now, are putting their hands up for politics. So I think that's one of the problems. The intrusion into your life. I mean, you're now, it's a Truman Show. It's 24-hour television, and that's how it works. The other thing is that because we've become such a wealthy country, there are many talented people who once went into politics and succeeded there, but succeed even before they think about politics and go very high elsewhere. So I think there's not quite the same number of people coming through. But fortunately, I've never seen our federal Labor caucus, and I've been around for a while, in better shape. We have brought a lot of new people through, high quality. I can't say that our opponents have done that, but I'll leave people to make their judgment on it. But
do you think we're going to an early election?
And here in Tassie, you've got a really bright new leader.
Can I just ask you, Wayne Swan, do you think we're going to go to an early election? I mean, it's one of the sort of, well, all this High Court debate about who's from where goes around at the moment. Do you think that it'll end up in Australia going back to the
Leon,
polls?
I got here last night and I turned on the TV and I saw five ads for the Liberals in Tasmania. I think there's an election happening.
Oh, I'm not talking about the state election.
No, I know you're not.
I think we're going to a state election.
I was gobsmacked. I thought, what's going on here? They must feel really shaken and vulnerable if they haven't got anywhere near announcing an election and they're smashing up TV with that amount of money. There must be somebody giving it to them. But anyway, look, I don't think you can rule anything out. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, we've got any number of members of the government who may not be members of parliament after the High Court decision. I think the government can limp on with the support in the lower house of the independents. But more important than anything else is just the loss of purpose in the government. I mean, their behaviour last week was just extraordinary, whether it was a senior minister, a foreign minister, putting at risk our diplomatic relations with New Zealand in an extraordinary way. It was just, the sort of behaviour is pretty disturbing. So maybe an election might help solve it.
On Mornings Around Tasmania, Ed Balls and Wayne Swan, our guests this morning, visiting Tasmania, doing a series of Labor functions, but always interesting to have a look at how they're going. Ed Balls, did you have much to do with the rise of Donald Trump while you were in political life, or had you left by then?
Well, I've been at Harvard for the last couple of years. I came out of Parliament in 2015. And if you'd said to me, 2 years ago when I came out of Parliament, that within 2 years I would be nominated for a TV award for dancing, I wouldn't have believed you. But if you'd told me also that Jeremy Corbyn would be elected leader of the Labour Party, Britain would be leaving the European Union and Donald Trump would be president of the United States, I think I probably wouldn't have believed that either. And I think the thing which was very striking to me going to Harvard in 2015 was nobody in the American political establishment believed Donald Trump was going to win, even until weeks before. And it's such an uncertain time. The unexpected is happening. And people who go out there at the moment and sort of buck the trend and reject the mainstream, at the moment, they're gaining some traction. But at what cost? Because, 6 months on, America's standing in the world is lower than it's been in my lifetime. America is now dividing around race. I think it's a time where companies are going to be very careful about investing because the future is uncertain. This is not the way to solve our big problems. And to go back to the conversation you had a moment ago, we get the politicians that we deserve. And politicians themselves have got to go out there and be more open and explain how hard things are. But also, we need the public and the media and everybody to also understand these are difficult decisions, and that that if in the end everything gets attacked and pilloried and smeared, you end up with the wrong kind of people becoming the politicians and the presidents. Our democracy depends upon good young people here in Tasmania thinking that they can serve the public and make their society better by going and getting elected. And if we don't have that sort of sense of the public purpose and duty of politics, then you end up with then bad outcomes.
And funnily enough, I sense that we are seeing a revival amongst that younger generation of an interest in politics. A lot of them feel very disadvantaged. You know, if you're under 30, and as you correctly pointed out before, you look at the housing market, and the impact of negative gearing and a whole lot of other intergenerational issues. If you look at the nature of work, I mean, many people now under 30 have never had a full-time job. So, their future, whether they can buy a home or, have a family, taking those sorts of decisions is now so much harder. And the one refreshing thing, if you like, I take out of Corbyn in the UK and Sanders in the US is a lot of those younger people really got moving, and that's a good thing.
The way that he was received at Glastonbury, Jeremy Corbyn, was quite the scene.
Well, you should ask him. He was there too.
You were at Glastonbury. You were cheering away. I mean, you weren't getting the response that Jeremy Corbyn was
writing
getting.
A piece. Well, no, I actually played in a band at Glastonbury. It was a very small audience. So it was enthusiastic, but not on the same scale as Jeremy Corbyn. The reality is that people want hope and a bit of optimism. And in Britain, I think the sense that austerity is not working and the government's not been about change means that people are looking for an alternative. And Jeremy Corbyn has made some ground there with young people. But that isn't the same as having a policy platform that can win a majority. And that's why I go back to saying that you have to be about optimism and hope and about real change with policies which can work and about not ducking the tough decisions and showing that you can lead.
One of the interesting things in Australia at the moment as well is The Economist once beautifully described it as demographically we have this piglet going through a python in terms of the ageing of the population. So we've got the political gravity heading towards older people, but at the same time young people and their needs
It's nowhere near as bad in Australia as it is in many other countries. Mm. Yes, we're ageing, but We are still relatively young compared to just about every other developed countries.
And Wayne Swan's still out there surfing, you know, most mornings in the summer. So he's clearly young. The thing which is very striking, if you look at the referendum result last year, you know, young people, people under 30, 35, 40, voted hugely to stay in the European Union. Mm. And people over 60 voted hugely to leave the European Union. And I think that's quite, it's dangerous when you have that degree of age-based polarisation.
But we could talk about increasingly, and it's easy to talk about, you know, taking more money from corporations, but maybe we need to be having conversations about death duties, a high level of death taxes in Australia. We need to be talking potentially about
I wouldn't necessarily be going down that road.
But a tax structure that looks at money, taking more money off people who have retired and left the PAYE tax system.
Well, I mean, retirees have had a pretty raw deal out of the current government. They've hit everyone at the bottom. I think there are changes to make our system more progressive. I mean, what Labor is talking about in terms of negative gearing and capital gains tax brings back the original Keating reforms. I mean, the implementation of that capital gains tax at full marginal rates by Keating years ago was a very progressive reform. So I would agree with you, we do need progressive reforms across our tax system. I've spent a lot of time in the last 6 months working on multinational tax evasion. I'm delighted to say we had a fantastic decision in the federal court on Chevron, a massive tax evader, a few weeks ago, which basically destroyed the case for a whole lot of very large multinationals, is now going to bring back billions to the Australian taxpayer. And that stemmed from a change I put in 2012. These people try and game the system all the time. And we've got to be very firm in knocking them out.
To both of you, it's been great to see you in the studio this morning. Thank you for coming in and enjoy the rest of your time.
My first ever visit to Tasmania, so it's a great honour to be here. Thank you.
Are you a Pinot Noir man? Are you going to be enjoying the cheeses?
I got a quick bite last night at a bar in Hobart called Jack Green,
mm-hmm.
and I had a very nice glass of Pinot Noir,
mm-hmm.
And there was a lot going on at mm-hmm. 10 o'clock at night on mm-hmm. a Sunday night in Hobart. Everybody says it's beautiful, and it clearly is beautiful.
A pom in Tasmania is that you're not going to whinge about the cold, and I like that.
You're at home.
Wayne has probably gone on about the cold. He's got his scarf on. You don't need a scarf because you're English.
And also, you know, to come to the place where Ricky Ponting hail from, one of Australia's great cricketers, just reminds everybody of Britain's Ashes success.
It's been good to meet both of you. Thanks for coming to the studio this morning. Yeah, indeed. Enjoy the rest of your time in Tasmania. Ed Balls, Wayne Swan on mornings around Tassie. You can join us too, 1300 222 936. To change the pace completely, in a moment or two, it's here.